welcome to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz on the board, ready to rock. That's all I got today.
No rambling prelude.
No rambling prelude.
Vaguely
we don't have time for that
some
today.
Sort of no. joke about current events.
No, not today. No.
All right. We'll work on your tight five next week.
Next week, yeah.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. So we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world, and sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be Aisha Jaangir, who is running for the New Democratic Party in Guelph this election. We'll have her in just a sec. And then after the break, we will talk about some of the news from this week, including the national campaign and what the party leaders were up to, and then we'll talk about impeachment madness in the United States. But first, she is sitting right here already, so I'd like to say welcome to Aisha Jaangir from the NDP. Thank you for coming by today, Aisha.
Thanks for having me here.
And I also want to thank you especially because I know this has been a very busy day for you because you were at Breezy Corners for the breakfast this morning for Phil and James' breakfast meeting, mm-hmm. Doing the meet and greet there. And then after this, you have a debate. So this is a very, very long yeah. day for you. I wanted to start by talking about something topical, which and you know was the controversy this time last week with the Prime Minister appearing in brown face in one photo and blackface and several other photos. And you did an interview with Guelph Today where you said that you wanted to move forward. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, for you, what does moving forward look like? Because, you know, at this point, it almost seems like the scandal has passed. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think for a lot of people, especially racialized people, the scandal is still very present. But you made the point of saying we need to move forward. And so what does moving forward look like?
Well, moving forward for me looks like exactly what have we learned from this? Because really, it's not a question of is Prime Minister Trudeau racist or not racist? It's that he identifies that what he did was wrong, mm-hmm. And he was apologetic. But, you know, what are some action plans? What is it that we can do to address racism in our country?
Mm-hmm. So given that, do you think that, and maybe this is part of how the media has covered it too, that it was so much about the scandal, but I mean, a lot of these too, and I think SNC-Lavalin could be a part of that too. We focus on the immediate scandal and how it affects somebody, and we don't really get into the nitty-gritty of why it's important. It's a scandal, and then it's until it's not a scandal.
Right. I mean, look at the timing.
Yeah.
It was used for politics, and we I recognize, you know, the timing and what that meant for politics in our election, but I think it's much bigger than that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the issues, because that's what we're all here to talk about. And I'm wondering about your day job, let's say, as a mental health nurse. And what do you think? We'll get to the NDP platform, but I mean, just generally, sort of looking at the issues and looking at how things are on the ground. And if you had like the ultimate God power of, you know, being able to, you know, enact a solution, you know, where do you think we are in terms of where the problems are in terms of like mental health, drug abuse, things like that? And this is fairly broad, but you know, given what you see, your experience as a mm-hmm. nurse at a correctional facility, where are the gaps and what do we need to fix them?
So working at a detention center or the jail in Hamilton, that's not the only place where I came to realize that for a lot of people, the issue is poverty and homelessness, along with stigma and the lack of mental health supports. So those are the issues that need to be addressed.
How about this is timely, of course, because the Stop the Stigma rally is downtown tomorrow. So, you know, there was a report a couple of weeks ago that our own our own safe consumption site saved, I think, 47 people who mm-hmm. overdosed, people who could have died if that facility might not have been there. So it does seem like maybe this is just conjecture, but you know, we're a bit ahead of the game, maybe in terms of other places. So in terms of Guelph's own actions, how do you think we're shaping up?
Overdose prevention sites or sites similar to that, making sure that there's a safe place for people to go is just the beginning. Mm. Because what we need to do is also ensure that there's adequate supports around addiction services and mental health. And that may include inpatient facilities for rehab, but it needs to go beyond that.
And like what?
We need to invest in those services. We need to invest in mental health. Mm-hmm. Overdose or suicides and overdose deaths are prevalent. There's actually a crisis that we're faced with across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And people are doing great work. But again, it's all dependent on funding.
Right.
And funding is always at risk.
Right.
Or the continuation of these programs are always at risk. And what we need to do is ensure that they are longstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about, well, I'd like to sort of plug in the NDP platform. And
plug away.
We're going to move forward and decriminalize drugs and make sure that they're, and addressing the stigma.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to address it is actually ensuring that people, you know, we talk about judgment. We talk about ensuring that, you know, people are able to access services with dignity and respect.
Mm-hmm.
After Breezy Breakfast today, I actually went down to Hope House because they had their anniversary today,
mm-hmm.
which was excellent. They had people in recovery talk about their journey, and it's phenomenal. And when I think about recovery, it's actually a second chance to life.
Right.
And it speaks to humanity when we support and serve people.
Yeah.
So I have a question that's somewhat along those lines too, in terms of the NDP's PharmaCare program. And it's the kind of thing appeals to a lot of people. It sounds fantastic to me. I'm like, this sounds like a great plan. Of course, the burning question is, how do you pay for that kind of thing? But seeing as you're in the field, how do you think kind of a national PharmaCare program would help in the scheme of things? In terms of healthcare overall?
Well, you're actually truly giving people the power to look after themselves,
mm-hmm.
right? There's been research done. There's 14,000 healthcare dollars that are wasted every minute, every day in the absence of PharmaCare. And there's over 600 deaths due to one single illness because people are unable to access medication.
Mm-hmm.
That's concerning.
Mm-hmm.
In the grand scheme of things, there will actually be healthcare dollars that will be saved. And more importantly, we'll be saving lives. So that's why PharmaCare is so important.
Right. And of course, part of the NDP platform too is free dental care.
Yes.
Which I think we have a greater understanding now is your mouth health is part of your overall health too. That, you know, what happens in your mouth can affect your heart, can affect your mm-hmm. lungs, can affect your brain.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah. Do you think that this is kind of this gets into one of those areas where I think people are with you in the theoretical, or anybody who, you know, is advocating for, you know, expanded medical care. But it's one of those things where you have to kind of vault over the nickel and diming, like
yeah.
the middle of the road concern that, you know, we're putting too much on the government coffers and,
mm-hmm.
you know, how do you circle that square, I guess? How do you convince the people who are concerned about the bottom line, I guess?
So the talk about initiating PharmaCare has been going on for over 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a report that was recently released in the summer with Dr. Hoskins, who was on as chair with a long list of recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
One of which, and this is entirely researched, well thought out, and one of his recommendations, and the most paramount recommendation, is that we must have PharmaCare, and the PharmaCare must be initiated as soon as possible for year 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Funding it, you know, we are going to, for the first time ever, introduce a wealth tax. And so individuals that have accumulated wealth of $20 million or more are going to be just going to be asked to pay an extra 1% so that we can fully fund this.
Mm-hmm. It does get to something that I noticed really prominently in the NDP platform. A lot of great pictures of Jagmeet there, by the way. He really knows how to work the camera. That's neither here nor there. But
it's true.
It's true, though. But this was featured rather prominently, this phrase, the courage to do what's right. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, do other politicians lack courage? And maybe does the electorate lack courage to vote, you know, for some of these directions that, you know, are pointedly meant to help the people who have the least in our society?
Yeah. And you know what? It's interesting that you say that, because when we talk about the people that have the least, that population in itself is growing and growing. And so there are, I mean, and I look at our youth and I look at our future. I'm quite troubled by what do they have ahead of them when we've got a rise of job insecurity. When we've got precarious work, we've got contract, we've got self-employed people that want to do an entrepreneurship, they do not have benefits. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about health, no one can guarantee that they're never going to need that, you know, in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people need to be future-oriented.
Mm.
This is about being proactive. It's not about today. It's about tomorrow. And if we're only going to concentrate about today, well, I'm going to tell you that there are many people out there that are unable to care for themselves.
Yeah.
And they're unable to care for themselves because they have legitimate barriers, one of which is affordability.
Mm.
So it's about time. And I really hope that people for this election, because it's a very important election, you know, that they are going to be inspired and empowered to do the right thing. Because honestly, we are in it for you.
Mm-hmm. Along with those lines, and one of the other promises is about creating more affordable housing, making it easier for people to buy homes, and in the way of like getting rid of, you know, money laundering and fraud and foreign buyers, or making it harder for foreign buyers to buy in. It strikes me, though, is that there has to be a certain degree of not being cozy with like the corporations and the big companies and the rich people, but there does has to be some sort of, I guess, mutual working together with the people with money in order to accomplish these things that you want to do. Or is it, you're making a face, or are you just thinking we're just going to steamroll over the money guys? But I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you know, easier to track flies with honey than vinegar.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Right. These are working relationships.
Sure.
Right. But what's very important that the government should never lose sight on who are they for.
Right.
Whatever decision that the government makes, it cannot forget that it must always be in the best interest of its people, in the best interest of the nation. And I think if you use that as your guiding principle, you won't go astray.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, unfortunately, that hasn't been the case, you know. And I'm not saying it's easy to do, because I'm a union labor activist with a quite extensive history in the labor movement, and I know what those relationships are all about, but you can never lose sight of who you're representing, ever, and you'll be good.
You led the negotiations with your fellow nurses at Homewood, which is a private facility. It's worth knowing, world renowned. So, are we maybe? I don't know. It seems like we're sort of, in our minds, predestined that you have to maybe choose a side, and that you're on this side or that side. We sort of lost the ability to compromise. And, you know, you have been a labor negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
You do know what it has to take to compromise. So, you know, in from your experience, what is the difference between, or like, where's the fine line between compromise and sort of abandoning the principles you think you're fighting for?
I'll reiterate, it's not easy, right? But you need to understand what is the goal, what is the objective, what are our needs? Because the only thing I can work with is the wants.
Right.
Right? And language is so important.
Mm.
And it can take days for us to negotiate. But at the end of the day, we need to be able to walk away from it saying that we have done the best that we can with understanding that we did it for the best interest of our nurses. And for me, it goes beyond that because I was truly advocating for my patients.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this then. How important is balancing the budget in the grand scheme of things? Because, I mean, it's not like in this election, it's all about who can balance it quicker. It does seem like everybody is talking about it being in the future, whether it's a year or 2 years or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But from your perspective, how important is a balanced budget?
Balancing a budget is extremely important. But again, it's not going to be making concessions with things that we need.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, this election is about people fighting for or standing up for their human rights.
Mm-hmm.
And we will do the best that we can to make sure that the rights of people are upheld and they are protected.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we can balance the budget, but maybe it requires a bit of art and skill with negotiations to get there.
What makes Jagmeet Singh, or what do you think would make Jagmeet Singh a good prime minister, from your observations?
Oh, he's authentic. And he is sincere. The first time I met him, I wasn't running.
Mm-hmm.
I had met him at an event. And I just found him very sincere and moving. And I think that's incredible. And he demonstrates leadership. It's not just talking about it. It's actually living it and being it. You know, talk about blackface and brownface.
Mm.
He did a phenomenal job.
Oh, yeah.
As a leader. And I feel really proud that I am working alongside him on this team, working hard to get what people need.
Any chance he's coming to Guelph, you know?
Stay tuned.
You know, I have put the ask out there,
okay.
To be honest. We would love to receive him. It would be wonderful for people to actually meet him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would like for him to come because I don't think he got a chance to come to Guelph when he was running for leader. I wanted to address, speaking of leadership, I don't know if it's, I can't remember if it said it explicitly in the NDP platform, but reading between the lines, it seems like the NDP think that the Liberals have failed on truth and reconciliation. Is that fair?
I think there was good intentions.
Mm.
But there is so much more work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about truth and reconciliation, it's about recognizing what we have done, the hurt, the pain, the trauma, and it's ensuring that we are going to do everything that we can to help with that recovery. And that means that we need to honor and respect Indigenous people, that there is no more we're telling you what we're going to do.
Right.
It's about asking them, how can we help you?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm waiting to see that. And I'm confident that the NDP will do exactly that. Because when it comes to Indigenous rights and reconciliation, that's at heart with everything that we do.
Let me ask the question the other way. Is it perhaps unreasonable to think that we could have undone 500, 600 years of racism in 4 years?
No, but I think there was an opportunity to do much more.
Okay.
That's what I would say, because people that live on reserves not having clean drinking water is absolutely appalling. Where those children have been taken away from their homes, from their parents, that breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
There is injustice that still continues, and we need to address that immediately.
I think indigenous concerns also lead us into environmental concerns.
Yeah.
I asked this question to Juanita last week, but it strikes me that unless you're the liberals and the conservatives, the stuff that has been done on climate change at the governmental level has not gone far enough. And I think both the NDP and the Green Party, the Communist Party, you know, mm-hmm. want to go even further. But there's this anchor that one of the political parties thinks that the carbon tax, as a progressive step forward that it is, perhaps not enough to meet our targets. And I think that the Parliamentary Budget Office has said as much. But there's still a group of people out there who see the carbon tax and that little step forward as an anchor and mm-hmm. are actively moving to undo it. And so how can we go push further on addressing climate change when there's a big group of people who, you know, are willing to take that for one
small step? Naysayers, they don't
yeah.
believe it.
I won't call them climate deniers, but I mean, they're people who see the carbon tax for whatever reason as something yeah. that is going to anchor the economy as opposed to something that...
No, it's probably trying to address the mess that we've created. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're here because of capitalism and greed and
sure.
and whatnot. And we just don't have time. We have to have bold plans, and we need to act.
Mm-hmm.
People are experiencing climate anxiety. People are experiencing guilt.
There's a group in Waterloo, actually, that is for people with climate anxiety.
It is such it's a real thing,
yeah.
right? It's true. And the best way to respond to that is to act.
Mm-hmm.
And how we do that collectively.
Right.
So, yes, the government must take a leadership role, but people need to come on board,
mm-hmm.
right? And that means we need to get some, I don't want to use buy-in, but
right.
but you know, like when it comes to the carbon tax, they need to trust
mm-hmm.
that this money is going towards to address the climate crisis that we are, and it's not even a tax because there isn't revenue that's generated from
right.
this. So it's neutral.
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to be much more aggressive because
right.
we need to clean up the mess that we've created. But more importantly, we need to hold those polluters,
mm-hmm.
the ones that have actually done the most damage, responsible.
Right, and the I can't remember the technical name for the act, the Greenhouse Gas Pollution Pricing Act. Nailed
mm-hmm.
it. It does make allowances for those big polluters, as you say, that
mm-hmm.
you know you don't necessarily have to because we recognize you as quote unquote job creators, so
mm-hmm.
we let you slide. But I mean, to get back to the point of what I'm trying to get at is that, you know, there are a group of people who have made it their mission to
mm-hmm.
say this small step, we don't like it and we will undo it at our earliest opportunity, whether that's through the court or whether that's electing a government that is
mm-hmm.
that'll just, you know, undo it with a sign of the governor general's pen. And how do we reach those people?
Mm-hmm. And you know what? That fear even comes in whenever there's an election,
mm-hmm.
right? Because
mm-hmm.
if a new government comes into power, they may very well wash away what the previous government has done. And that's a grave concern to us as NDPers. And Jagmeet Singh is committed to having an accountability office
mm-hmm.
that is going to be nonpartisan. And this office will be compiled of experts and scientists that are going to continue to advise on how to address and act in response to the climate crisis. And that's something that we need.
That was a great pivot. You're coming along as a politician, I will say. I'm going to try and ask this of all the candidates, but just to sort of generate, you know, a better way of campaigning, I want to talk about our current MP, Lloyd Longfield. And I wanted to ask you, what has Lloyd Longfield done as a member of parliament that has impressed you or has made you, you know, I'm fishing for a compliment because you're running to replace him, obviously, but we're not all bad people.
No.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's something about Lloyd?
He's he's a really nice man. You know, like I met him in Ottawa, like, you know, and I've met him through this campaign trail. And I think all of us have been really demonstrating civility, and we've been treating each other with kindness and respect. And, you know, I hope that we keep up the good work. So he's a good guy.
So the mean stuff's coming at the end of the campaign is what you're saying. I kid. How about what do you wish you were talking about this election, or wish you were talking about more? What are we letting go by during this campaign that should be top of mind, a topic of conversation?
I just the message I'd like to relay, or what I feel there's a lot of you know, I'm hearing or getting a sense of some voter apathy. I'm hearing, you know, ways of voting. But what I would really truly encourage people to do for this election is ask themselves a question. What is important to me? Mm-hmm. What are my values? What do I believe in? And if they have children, look at their children. What's important for me and my family? And then I am totally confident that they will make the right choice.
Which is the right choice?
NDP all the way.
I wanted to hear you say it. If people wanted to reach out and talk or get involved with your campaign, how can people find you?
You can look at us up online. Our website is there. If you look up Guelph NDP, our phone number should be available there too. We have a campaign office on 322 Eastview. If anyone would like to join our phenomenal team and help us out through this election, that'd be wonderful. We're looking for volunteers, donors. So anything that anyone's willing to do, we'd welcome that.
All right. Well, Aisha, thank you so much. I know you have a debate to get ready for, but thank you for making an Open Sources Stop part of your campaign journey. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And we are going to take a quick break and talk about, you know, election stuff. And I think I heard something happen in the United States this week.
Really?
Yeah. We'll have to dig into that when we get back. Yeah, you're listening to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
When our Leo didn't know, he was starting to miss. How it all turns out is anyone's guess. I use it all the time, I must confess. But if I care a little more, I'll use a little less. You got to use it again. You throw it away. Cause it's a beautiful world. Baby, don't you throw it away.
Ah, there's a song in the spirit of the times and everything's going on reclimate the past week or two. That song is Don't Throw It Away by Keb Moe on his album Oklahoma, new to the station. And the Canadian link is that it's produced by Colin Linden.
Mm-hmm. It was cool. I liked it.
Yeah, it's like you said, a Randy Newman kind of feel. But I think Randy Newman probably takes a page from this guy, not vice versa. But anyway, Randy Newman, he's still alive, eh?
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
Still doing soundtracks? I used to see him during the Oscars.
He was on Toy Story 4. He was
Randy Newman.
Toy Story 4.
And
Toy Story
piano.
4 wasn't music heavy. There was one other song aside from You've Got a Friend in Me and Toy Story 4. But I digress. We're not here to talk about movies.
I'm sorry, because you can't play short people on the radio anymore, but...
Eh, whatever.
So his biggest hit, anyway.
So back on the campaign
trail. Back to
reality,
yes.
As we kind of alluded to in our interview with Aisha, it seems like the brown face, black face gate has come and gone. It seems like it's over, which I think is a shame because it... I mean, it's not a shame in that, you know, the sense that we need to talk about the Prime Minister's racist costume decisions of the past. But I mean, it's a shame that it came and went without really kind of attacking the the main issues.
Yeah, I think it's over in the mainstream media, yeah. And obviously we're talking about it a little bit, but yeah. it definitely is still playing out on social media, probably until the campaign is over.
Well, it'll play out long after that. And
I was wondering whether it's going to come up at the next debate, where Trudeau is supposed to be present, right, this time?
Yeah, because they canceled the Monk debate because he wasn't going to be there. Although Cam Guthrie volunteered to take Trudeau's place, which...
Really? I didn't hear that one.
No, he did. It was on Twitter, and...
What, as a liberal, just as a guy?
I think he just wanted to be special guest Cam Guthrie.
It's like a seat filler at the Oscars.
Yeah, it would have been interesting.
Hey, it's Cam.
It would have been interesting. I wish they took him up on it, but alas.
I like that one. That's good.
I think it's unfortunate because it's like back to like this tit for tat, like liberals promise this and PCs promise that and NDP promise this and the Greens. Although the Greens released their COSSET platform this week.
Did you get a chance to pick through it?
A little bit.
Is it balanced? The question you asked is like, you know, is it balanced? Everybody seems determined to balance everything.
No, it's like balance in 5 years is their plan. Although, I did read a Toronto Star article that said that a third party went over the numbers and let's just say found them wanting.
Oh.
So that, you know, maybe the NDP, or sorry, the Green Party, don't cross the streams.
ND
the
Green
Party. Not take into account all the potential, let's say, economic factors. But it seems like we're back to the boring old campaign. And again, like the whole controversy doesn't seem to have affected anything much. And, you know... the poll of polls from Grenier puts the Conservatives at 34.4, the Liberals at 33.3, which is like statistically a dead heat. But when you break it down into like the seat numbers, it's 56% that the Liberals will form a government and 44% that the Conservatives will form a government. So like there's a 1 in 4 chance it'll be a majority Liberal, almost a 1 in 3 chance it'll be a minority Liberal. 15% chance it'll be a majority conservative and about 30% chance it'll be conservative minority. So it's
a bit
coin tossy.
We still got a little bit of time, but yeah, as you said, we're back to the status quo. And I noticed this week, at least the back and forth, provincial level, in particular, Ontario has taken on some, probably more, not resonance, but they're talking about it more than they would normally in a campaign. Because mm-hmm. Sounded like Trudeau has every chance he gets, says the, or evokes the name of Doug Ford.
He's running against Doug Ford, not Andrew Scheer.
And it would seem Andrew Scheer, although, you know, they both mention each other regularly. I heard when he went after McGuinty, like, who are you running against? There's been commentary saying that Scheer is echoing very strongly some Harper talking points, and they did sort of a side by side of like, so maybe he kind of forgot who was the previous Liberal government. He has talked about Kathleen Wynne as well, but it's like Wynne McGuinty. That was a line that who was using that in the? I guess it was in the provincial battle. It was like Wynne McGuinty years. I guess it was Ford. It's all blurring into one.
Well, people have been using that since it was like since Kathleen Wynne took over. It was like, you know, it went from McGuinty to Wynne.
Those Peterson Liberals, they wrecked everything. You know, yeah, this is going to keep going
like,
back in time.
Are they getting after Bob Ray next?
Yeah.
Like
that Bob Ray.
It's
30
funny
years
you
ago
because Scheer was talking about, and this is such a like, oh, I hate this policy just from him articulating it. But I think it was in Windsor yesterday. He's like, I'm gonna pass a law that says for every one regulation you propose, you have to cut two. And it's like really, this is what we're doing
two
now?
Two random ones or like two
right
specific ones? Or
and he said that there's a rat's nest of policies and processes, which is, and people correctly pointed out, it's like such a Trump way of talking, such a Ford way of talking. And it's like, on the one hand, you have Trudeau running against Doug Ford, basically. On the other hand, you have Andrew Scheer, who, you know,
is running
doesn't want to see Doug Ford's face, but on the other hand doesn't, you know, is more than cool with, you know, dealing with this all regulations are bad and this is a rat's nest and this is a dog's breakfast kind of talking points rather
running
than being
against
I was going to say snot nose. You know, the kind of prep school kid you think he is.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's running against. He's running parallel to the conservative ghosts that follow him.
Right.
Maybe not necessarily ghosts. That might not be the best choice of words, but the specter of conservatism. And the regular talking points, which is what we expect. Singh was in Quebec, which was interesting. I wasn't able to see. We've lost Channel 25 through the air. But anyway, Tout le monde en parle, which is the big Quebec show. I think it's the most watched show in Quebec, and it sounded like the talking points came up right away. It was Bill 21, which is massive in Quebec. This is a lot as to why there's some skepticism in Quebec as to whether the NDP will do as not. They would probably never do as well as the Orange Crush, but they say a lot of support is gone simply because he is a man wearing a turban, which you think is ridiculous in 2019 in Canada. But then again, we have the only province here where you can't like be a teacher and wear a turban.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting. He went like straight to Quebec. And I think he went to New Brunswick as well, didn't
he,
finally?
Yeah.
So they can't use that as a point against him anymore. I was like, I finally made it to New Brunswick.
Well, I mean, it's like a check mark he's got to do on the campaign bucket list so that, basically they can't use it against him.
But currently the Bloc are polling ahead of them. So could this be
in Quebec?
Yes.
Yeah.
So could this be the year of not the massive comeback for the Bloc? They were the opposition at one point in time, but those are special circumstances. But new leader, new perspective, some fresh blood, like all parties need eventually. So maybe the Bloc is going to be a factor this time. I don't know about the People's Parties, whether they're going to be the factor
that Maxime Bernier, the prophesized biblical king?
Yes, I saw a bit of that, and I found it, not difficult to watch, but not surprising. Bernier's face, I don't think he really knew what to say. Did you watch the whole thing? I just saw a bit of a clip.
I saw the clip.
What? And
he's like, but I think,
thought he was getting a compliment, but it's like, you do realize this is coming from Crazy Town, right? Like,
he said, I'm trying my best, which is like, what else can you say?
It says in the Bible you're the guy. Like,
right. And that came from Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson. Don't trust anyone with four names.
Four? No.
But she's a former televangelist with the 700 Club, which is Pat Robertson's outfit.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm pretty sure that there are some evangelicals who've also compared Donald Trump to King J.O. from the Old Testament. If you don't know your Bible, he's the king that led a rebellion against Queen Jezebel. And even if you don't know the biblical story, you'll probably definitely know the name Jezebel. And the assumption is that our world is so corrupt with so many queer people and so many women in charge and so many like social degradation things, their opinion that we need a king Jaya to come in and, you know, clean the place up.
Somebody's made an oil painting of Bernier that we're going to see online of him as the king, as they do with Trump, which we'll get to in about 3 minutes or so. But and what of Elizabeth May this week? She's getting some shout outs in the mainstream media, but not quite as closely scrutinized as the.
The only big thing was the
she's there.
She'll appear there.
And I think because of the climate strike on Friday and maybe the one to follow.
And I have been seeing them carrying, like the mainstream media carrying more green events. Like it's not unusual that the 24-hour news channels will carry live like a Trudeau event or a Scheer event or even a Singh event. But I have been seeing more Elizabeth May events be carried live, which is an interesting change of pace. The Greens are at 10%, which is just 3.5 points behind the NDP nationally. So I'm still somewhat suspect they will get enough seats to hold the quote unquote balance of power. But they are kind of getting more mainstream attention. Of course, with more mainstream attention, there's going to be stuff like the whole Photoshop metal reusable cup and metal straw,
which was in either BBC or The Guardian, but also Guardian. Also in The Guardian was Steve Dick.
Yeah.
Which I read The Guardian and I was like, wow, It's like it's not often Guelph is in there, let alone this campaign. So they obviously have somebody following the Canadian campaign.
It was a great week for Guelph with John Hamm talking about Yukon Gold potatoes.
Yes. Which made me decide that we need to go for fries after the show. So that's happening too, but we won't disclose the location because
we don't want to be mobbed
from
by
a secret
our fans.
Fry location. Yes.
All right, let's talk about this. So. Donald Trump is officially under an impeachment investigation. Oh, I wish I had some music queued up or something, but
I'm going to compose the impeachment song on GarageBand and we'll have it for dun, 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 dun.
So Nancy Pelosi came out Tuesday afternoon and said that this whole saga with calling the new Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, and asking him to investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter for a thoroughly debunked conspiracy about Joe Biden firing, getting a prosecutor fired so that Hunter Biden, I guess, can win the Ukraine or something. but, yeah, so Nancy Pelosi came out and said, this is it, was it. Impeachment proceedings were gone, and she basically took the chains off Jerry Nadler, Adam Schiff, Maxine Waters, and everybody who's in charge of any committee in the House to
release the hounds.
Yeah, basically.
Yes, this was chosen as one of our topics this week. It started off sort of quiet, I was like, and then right, but it was just boom, exploded. The notes, everything exploded. including Twitter. What was the line from Trump? It's like his shortest tweet ever. Presidential harassment.
Yeah.
You're harassing me. He's
in all caps.
In all caps. It got all Trump really good. I didn't do it. I didn't. And his comments. And it's coincidental, but also strange that Zelensky and Trump had that meeting today. Like that was going to happen anyway. I think, right?
It was on the books
at the UN.
Yeah,
but the best part about Zelensky, and you know this story, but maybe people don't, is that Zelensky, in some ways, is like Trump. Maybe not directly politically, but his entire fame is based on a show he was on, which is on Netflix now called Servant of the People, which I've watched a few times. He was on this TV show. It's about a teacher that becomes the president of the Ukraine. It was 4 or 5 years ago, I think the show started and ran for a couple of seasons. Then it turned into a political party called Servant of the People with him as its head. And now he's the president of the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weirdest, weirdest story. It's actually a pretty good show, but you can't watch it while you're eating because there's subtitles, but unless you speak Ukrainian. Anyway, total aside there, but I just, it's so weird that this is the guy that might end upending everything.
It's weird, but it's not weird. Because
of all the presidents, right? All the people in the world.
Right. It's not so much for Zelensky, but, you know, for Trump, he made this call the day after Mueller testified.
So a beautiful call. Lots of calls. I think what's a beautiful call?
It's a beautiful call.
Trump, are you okay? I don't think you're okay.
I don't
okay.
think he's okay.
No,
I think
there's something wrong.
There is something really wrong.
Like beyond did you see his speech at the UN? It was like, it's all squinty and kind of like, I don't really know why I'm here kind of
God,
delivery. Like,
God knows Wilbur Ross loved it.
Patriots, man.
Yeah. Anyway,
you're a patriot, you're a globalist, and meh.
Well, it's
like, what the hell, man?
It's part of the reason, like the avalanche effect of this is that, it would have been a big deal if Pelosi had come out on Tuesday and done this anyway. But what really got, I think, a lot of us who observe this carefully is that all of a sudden the Trump administration was being super cooperative. That on Tuesday they announced they were going to release the transcript of the phone call. Yesterday, and then shortly after Nancy Pelosi made that announcement, they said they were going to release this whistleblower complaint to the Intelligence Committee, which should have been done anyway, should have been done within 7 days of the complaint being filed, but it's been held up for months by the obstruction of the Trump administration. But all of a sudden, and this goes to all the naysayers who are like, is impeaching worth it? Yeah. Because the lesson, because of what we saw, the fact that he made this phone call the day after Mueller testified is the lesson of Trump was, yes, Donald, you really can shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. And so he tried to do it again. He tried to do the exact same thing again. And when Nancy Pelosi, when the news was released that Nancy Pelosi was calling the caucus together for an emergency meeting Tuesday afternoon. Trump calls Nancy and asks her, like, hey, is there any way we could, like, you know, be totally chill about this? It was suddenly clear, uh-oh, maybe there are consequences to this. And all of a sudden, everybody decided to get, I'm not going to say super cooperative, but they definitely decided to get cooperative because blank is serious now.
Oh, yeah.
And you saw that this morning, like the what's his face? McGuire, the acting DNI.
What's his face?
Was testifying in front of the House Intelligence Committee today. And the Republicans were being a-holes, but they weren't being as big in a-holes as they have been in the past, like with Lewandowski last week and other things. There's definitely a feeling that something has changed and blank is for real now. I keep using blank as a
swear
word.
Oh, don't you wish we could just say it?
Just say it. One day in this nation.
But it's real now. There could be consequences. The votes are there. 218 have said they will vote to impeach. So
and it's just a matter of convincing the
100
Senate.
100 in the last week, pretty much.
And the Mitt Romney came out, obviously, against Trump on the Senate. But there's, like, I think there's 19 more to go before there's a tipping point in the Senate where they can say he's definitely, you know, it's going to go down that path. But for Nancy Pelosi was one of the reluctant ones. Mm-hmm. For ages, he's like, well, this isn't going to achieve anything. The election's coming. But finally, well, the evidence was fairly clear that they had to do this, because if they don't do this, then it's all of that other stuff we don't, or not us specifically, but people don't think about in the States. They just think the president, they have serious processes in place for things like this. And if it's seen that, you know, Pelosi and the Democrats and the so-called enemies of Trump, well, they are, I guess, but so-called, don't act on this, then it's seen as a weakness. So saying, well, you know, you should have done this. And of course, Trump is in bring it on mode. And I happened to get home right when Pelosi had finished speaking, didn't know what was going on yet. And then Trump logged on to Twitter and Trump, they were ready for this. Mm-hmm. Trump had tweeted this supercut of Democrats going impeach, 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 impeach. There's all these people saying impeach. And then there's this, it cuts to one of those Trump trying to be momentous. It's, you know, right out of the North Korea playbook. It's like, blah, blah, blah. Being a statesman, it's like, you know, this is what the Democrats wanted all along. It's like, they wanted to impeach me. It's like, you were ready for this. So either somebody tipped them off or they knew.
Right.
They knew that the blank was going to hit the fan. Big, smucky blank.
Well, I mean, that's the public
all over
face.
The room, man.
That's the public face. Like, it's one thing to have a video ready to go on social media, but they accidentally sent their talking points to Democrats yesterday in an email and said, hey, Democrats.
Was it an accident, though? Was it?
That was could you maybe send us our talking points back or like, delete the email? And then there was the incident.
Undo.
I guess it was this morning when he was talking to the U.S. mission to the U.N., where he's like going, you know what? We used to know what to do with spies and traitors back in the day.
He actually did that out in public. I didn't see that.
Because it was like kind of like a friendly gathering of the U.S. mission to the U.N. And in comes Trump and goes, this is BS! I wish we could go back to the old days where I just kill a spy. This is ridiculous.
Uncle Krusty's drunk again.
But I mean, this was so hard to ignore. And I'm glad that, because Nancy Pelosi was the last bulkhead. And the whole thing that reminded me in the days leading up to this is that Trump was like practically going, he was going out to press gaggles. He was going out on Twitter and going, I did it. You know what? I did it. I did it. I tried to collude. I tried to get him on my side. I did it. Like, what are you going to do about it? And then it reminded me of this Folgers coffee commercial where it's like these two cops interrogating a criminal and the criminal is sitting there going, I did it. I did it. And the cops are like, sure you did. We can wait all night because we have this great Folgers coffee to drink. The gag of the commercial is that they're having such a great time drinking this wonderful Folgers coffee that they're going to torture this guy even though he's confessing. And it's like that. Trump goes online and says, I did it. And Nancy Pelosi goes, well, we don't have all the facts yet. And Trump goes like, no, you have all the facts. I did it. And then it goes to, you know, Chuck Todd or somebody is like, does the president know what he's saying? Let's bring in my panel and talk about it. And Trump goes, you don't need the freaking panel. I did it. I'm telling you I did it. And Jake Tapper's like, did he really do it? Let's go to my panel. And it's like.
But no pressure. No pushing.
Of course they had to impeach. I mean, it's worth noting, like, he hasn't been impeached yet. This is like an impeachment inquiry. But the reason it's so important is because there are a big percentage of people in the United States who are not there, who don't like the idea of the president being impeached. Of course, the same thing happened during Watergate. Mm-hmm. Before the impeachment inquiry, most people didn't want to impeach Nixon. So you need the inquiry because you need to tell the story. You need to lay it all out. One piece after another and say, this is why. It's because of this incident, it's because of this incident, and because of this incident. And cosmic irony, 46 years ago yesterday was the day Nixon's first vice president, Spiro Agnew, wrote his letter to the Speaker of the House asking the Speaker to impeach him. Because Spiro Agnew, when he was the governor of Maryland, was basically influence peddling. And so he was charged with bribery and conspiracy and extortion. And he wrote this letter 46 years ago yesterday to the Speaker of the House saying to impeach him. The Speaker said no. And eventually what happened is Spiro Agnew resigned. Mm-hmm. And was eventually pled innocent or eventually pled guilty to a lesser crime, which I think was tax evasion, which would make him the second most famous person to be convicted of tax evasion in American history. But it's interesting to just watch how all this comes around. Mm-hmm. And now that is what the Democrats have to do is I give no credit to the Democrats to be able to do this, but they have to lay out the case. That's what they have to do now. The corruption, the Mar-a-Lago stuff, the Air Force refilling at Turnberry, owning the Trump Hotel, making phone calls to world leaders, like being cozy with MBS, all that stuff. And yeah, that's the next mission. So I mean, it's not over yet.
The Jenga tower is teetering, though. But,
yeah,
but that Greta Thunberg stare.
Oh my goodness!
Made my week. I was like, wow. Let's see. If that actually had a force behind it, he was as good as done. Probably
don't want to run into her in a dark alley.
It was like, whoa. Wow, we're so afraid of the 16-year-old kid, but man, she's got laser eyes. She's going to sink you.
Well, I mean, we were talking about this before the show, and I've seen a lot of people talk about it online that, you know, for some strange reason, like a 16-year-old girl from Sweden, like, is driving some people just crazy, her advocacy and her passion. And it's just like, what?
You have a problem.
You have a problem. Yeah, you have a problem
with this kid.
And of course, Trump tries to troll her, like, oh, she seems a happy, well-adjusted girl with a bright future. And of course, that's what she sticks on her Twitter description: a happy, well-adjusted girl with a bright future.
Fantastic.
So she'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Greta will be
fine. Try and get her on.
Oh, we could.
She's on Democracy Now! This week. So.
Yeah, let's get Greta on to yell at us.
What are you doing?
Anyway, we'll see if that comes to fruition next week. If not, we will still have People's Party candidate Mark Perolivas on to talk about the campaign. And then we'll talk about other stuff. If you like this episode of the show, you can certainly find it again at our podcast channel. Download it every Monday from our website or on Podbean. That is our podcast channel, the Guelph Politicast channel. Or you can find it on your favorite podcast app, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find us on opensourcesguelph.com, Facebook at opensourcesnewswire, and Twitter at @OS_Guelph. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. Or you can go to my news and politics site, guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. See you at the debate in 1 hour's time.
Oh, yes. Good. Well done. Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me, who will get you tuned up for the debate with a great debate soundtrack. I'm lying. I don't know what she's doing. that's at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources. And we'll see you then.